hear the Good Neighbor Network, FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, audio and video streaming at WGNSradio.com. This is a WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Bart Walker.
Well, good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line. And this morning, we're visiting with Rutherford County Sheriff's Office Deputy Chris Beach. We're going to be talking about the peer support group at the Sheriff's Office. Chris, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bart.
Great to have you with us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Is it warm enough for you out there?
Oh, it's plenty warm.
I feel sorry for all the officers. In addition to the warm weather, you have all of this stuff, bulletproof vest and all of the stuff you carry. That is bound to make it even warmer.
It does, and after about a week, it gets pretty stinky.
I was out the other day at a restaurant, and I looked out the window, and I just happened to see a deputy running after somebody, and it was a hot day, and he caught the guy on foot. This was a foot pursuit, tackled him to the ground, and I thought, boy, what a great service he's doing, but he isn't doing it in the best weather out there.
Right. Yeah. It wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't for the humidity. It's been brutal.
Well, you're going to be talking today about the peer support group. First of all, what is that? I'm not familiar with that group.
Okay. So I'm gonna read you the actual definition and then I'll go into, you know, what it really is. So peer support for law enforcement refers to a non-clinical confidential program where trained law enforcement officers provide emotional, psychological, and practical assistance to their colleagues. Peer supporters share similar job experiences, offer a safe space for officers to discuss stressors unique to policing, such as exposure to violence, critical incidents, moral injury, work-life balance challenges. The aim is to provide mental wellness, resilience, and healthy coping mechanisms, and reduce stigma around seeking, you know, professional help when that's needed. What it is, I mean, shorten that up. It's officers that have specific training to provide help to their coworkers, whatever that help needs to be.
So these are officers.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We've got about 35 right now that are trained, and I'm sending 11 more to class tomorrow. And it's a department-wide program. It's in our jail. It's on patrol. It's with our SROs. It's it department-wide. And as you know, police officers, law enforcement, all first responders see a lot of terrible things. I mean, the public has no idea. They have no idea that the absolutely terrible things that we see on a regular basis. And you go to these calls, and you know you may see somebody mangled in a car crash, and it may be a child or whatever, and that's not the end of your day. Like, you go to the next call after that, right? And that stuff stacks up on people. And the idea of this is to help officers when these things happen and in the aftermath of this stuff, and to keep it from stacking up on them down the road and you know, potentially causing something that's going to end their career or a marriage or something like that.
So even these peer support officers in this group, they have people who are their peer support helpers too.
Yes.
I mean, because if they're officers, they see the same things.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's part of the reason that peer support programs are successful, because so you may or may not know this, but cops don't trust a lot of people. All right. It's just, you know, it comes along with the job.
I think everybody's that way.
Right. Well, yeah, these days. But, you know, they're more likely to talk to the people that are next to them every day, you know, mm-hmm. doing the job with them. And but yes, our peer supporters also get support from other peer supporters. So the idea is that you've got somebody there. It's a confidential thing. You know, if you're having a conversation with somebody that's a peer support, that in a peer support capacity, that conversation is confidential. And it's a place for somebody to get help where they might not otherwise get it.
Is this something that we've needed in the past, or has time made things more difficult in law enforcement?
Well, certainly in Rutherford County, things have, I mean, I've been with the county for 25 years, and certainly it's changed a lot. I mean, you look out the window 25 years ago versus looking out the window right now, and you can see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all of those things translate into more difficult situations for first responders. And so when you've got a population that's, you know, every 10 years growing 50%, that increases, you know, the amount of critical incidents that we're going to have, the amount of calls that we're going to respond to. And and our agency's grown. And so, it is something that's been needed for a long time. I'm glad we're finally doing it. You know, the short answer to your question is, I wish this had been around forever. But the need for it has certainly increased, and more agencies are starting to implement programs like ours.
You hear, at least and on some TV shows, and I don't know how accurate it is. I think it's pretty accurate because I think the city has this program where they have some trained psychological counselors, not law enforcement agent officers, but psychological counselors who go on some of the calls that they know are going to be a challenging call. Does the county have anything like that?
We do. It's the co-responder program is what you're referring to. Those are mainly for the public. So if we're responding to a call where, you know, there's a possible mental health aspect to it, a co-responder can respond as well and provide, you know, service or follow up to the public, to the person that we're responding to. Those aren't, they're not there necessarily for the officers. That they certainly assist us with those situations, but their primary function is to provide service to the public, not to the officers in the agency. So while that's an excellent program and does a lot of good, it's different from what I'm talking about.
Okay, so this one is one with officers helping officers, but these officers who are the peer support officers, they go through special training. Tell us a little about that training. How much time does it take? And
yes, sir.
What does it involve?
The basic training. So, first of all, the people that are attending the training, they've already had extensive training in, you know, reducing, you know, de-escalation and communication and all those things. So that part of it is pretty much already done. The basic peer support training that we do is done through the Tennessee Public Safety Network. It's a nonprofit agency or organization that's been around for a long, long time, which I can't say enough good things about. They're fantastic. They're just awesome. They provide our training for us. They've got excellent instructors, and our training is 16 hours. It's a two-day class that goes into the psychology of things. There's a lot of scenario stuff involved in it, and it's a whole lot of stuff packed into 2 days, and that's just basic peer support. And then there will be ongoing training that'll occur from that point forward. But just the basic class is a 2-day, 16-hour class that again is pretty solidly packed with information from start to end.
We have a text here from a listener who are asking, with changes in things that people do over the times, how often is the peer support class updated to reflect what people are doing these days? And I'm guessing, I sort of understand what they're asking there. I guess crimes change and the way people do them change from time to time. How often, how current is this material that they're helping you with?
So I think maybe what they're asking is how up to date is the material taught in the class? And the answer is it's the very latest studies and information that you can get related to mental illnesses or PTSD and all of those things. The main instructor for that class is a mental health clinician, and he was a former police officer and has been through a lot of stuff on his own, and he's an absolutely fantastic instructor. But everything that he does, everything he teaches, is absolutely up to date to the most current thing.
Very good. How much training do you have once a officer is fully credited and ready to hit the streets? Do you have ongoing training?
Just police officers in general?
Yes. Or deputies?
Yes, sir. We're required to have 40 hours of in-service each year. Most deputies go well beyond that. Our agency is very good about letting deputies attend trainings that they want to attend. So if they want to get into a special thing and they want to go to a class about it, and they put in to go, generally, as long as we've got the budget for it, our agency is real good about letting us do that. But at a bare minimum, they're going to attend 40 hours of in-service every year. That's mandated by the Tennessee Post Commission.
Very good. So you're always working to improve what you're doing. I remember one of the problems that, or challenges, I guess, is better, is that you have a big area to cover, and sometimes there are not many people covering it, especially in the evening hours. Is that still true, or do you feel like you're getting more recruits in that sort of fill in some of the loose ends?
Our county is 600 and something square miles, so it is very large. And we absolutely could use more people. We've sometimes got one officer covering, they may take them 20 minutes running lights and sirens to get to a call from one end of their zone to the other. And
is that daytime and night, or is it just evening hours?
So during the day, we have shifts that overlap at certain times, and when that happens, we've got multiple officers in each zone, but most of the time we've only got one officer in each zone, except for one of the zones we have two officers in, and that's one of the busier zones. But in the evenings is when we have the most overlap, so we've actually got the most people on the road in the evenings depending on the hours. It's you know, without going into our whole scheduling,
challenge.
There are times when they try to do it strategically, where we've got, you know, where we have the most call volume, we have the most people there, but you can never really plan for that completely.
Here's another text from a listener, and this person is asking, I know that the sheriff's office covers the entire county, but if you look at, say, the city of Smyrna or Laverne or Murfreesboro, they have their own police departments. Do you worry about coverage in those areas also, or are you strictly looking at outside those areas?
So if somebody calls 911 outside of a municipality, they're outside the city limits, we're going to be the ones that respond. That doesn't mean that we don't do law enforcement inside of city limits as well. So if we make a traffic stop or do something inside the city, then it's, you know, we have jurisdiction anywhere in the county. And then, you know, if agencies have something where they need assistance, they'll often call us, and we'll respond inside the city to assist those agencies. So primarily when we respond to calls, 911 calls, things like that, it is outside of the city limits in the county.
What do we, is there any particular thing, as a seasoned officer with a good, strong background, you have some opinions, I'm sure. What are the areas that we, if you had a magic wand and it really worked and you were able to wave it over some area that needed help, what would you like to see done with the sheriff's office?
Well, honestly, what I'm doing is part of that. They've put a lot of resources into this. We have an app that goes along with the peer support program. It's fantastic. It ties in with our dispatch system, our CAD system, computer aided dispatch. And the app will alert me when there's been, you know, a critical incident. It'll tell me everybody who was involved. I can assign peer supporters to them through the app. The peer supporters will get a notification that they've got an assignment. They can go and check on the people that were involved in that. It's a really fantastic. It keeps statistics and all that stuff. It's really great while maintaining confidentiality. It's awesome. And the sheriff's office has put significant resources into allowing us to do that. That's a magic wand that I think has already been waved.
But that's great.
I mean, there's always room for improvement, and you know, it would be awesome to have unlimited resources and you know, have, you know, an abundance of staff and all of those things. You know, our detention side of things, I don't know the latest numbers, but they are continually 40 or 50 people below where they need. And, you know, our jail's overcrowded, and those guys are guys and girls are very overworked and underpaid, and you know, it's just a constant struggle. I mean, I'd like to wave a magic wand and make things better for them, but
that's been a problem since before we had that jail. That's what built that jail.
The jail was overcrowded the day that it opened, as if I remember correctly.
And we built the jail because of a federal mandate that said the jail you have is overcrowded.
Right. And, you know, and here we are. The jail opened in 1999, because when I hired in, that's what I was hired for, to work in that jail.
The high-rise jail.
Right. And you know, here we are in 2025, and it's woefully understaffed and overcrowded.
Is it that way everywhere? Because when the jail was downtown on East Main, it was overcrowded. Then you built the, I guess it was one-story jail over beside the high-rise. And within a very short period, it was overcrowded. Is that just part of law enforcement?
It is in some places. I mean, again, when you have a county that's increasing population 50% every 10 years, all of that's a trickle down. Okay, so you know, infrastructure gets, you know, traffic. I mean, but same thing happens with the jail. I mean, you've got more crime, you've got more population, and you've got the jail that we had in 1999. You know, and so if you look at, you know, census 1999 versus now, it's a very large difference in numbers.
Oh, huge difference.
And that stuff translates into, you know, you've got more crime, you've got more inmates.
We're talking this morning about law and order. We're talking about some of the great programs that they have at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, the Peer Support Group, which is helping the deputies who are facing, as Deputy Beach said just a moment ago, you see terrible things. You may see it in the morning of a terrible traffic accident. Then you move on to your next. You may go to a fire and see some people injured really badly. It's just a day of, you never know what you're going to see. But many times it's really unpleasant things, several at one time. We'll be back and continue the conversation. If you have a question, text it to us, 615-618-1450, 615-618-1450. We will get to it and be back with your answers in just a moment.
We're News Radio WGNS, 100.5, 101.9, 1450. Online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. MTE's Plugged In podcast focuses on the world of electric vehicles. Stay up to date on the EV world, hear interviews with experts, and more. Listen on your favorite podcast platform or visit MTE.com/pluggedin.
Come by our store, Music World and Drummer's Den. We're a full-line music instrument store with well over 5,000 square feet packed with great instruments in every category. In guitars, we're your local dealer for the two top acoustic guitar brands in the world, Martin and Taylor. We've got the best selection and prices anywhere in the state of Tennessee on these. This is Dave Kivenemy at Music World and Drummer's Den in Murfreesboro, 2762 South Church Street, across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. When Kristen said, okay, you know, when we're going to do the remodel, because we're celebrating 35 years, we also wanted to make it more open and inviting, so we made the lobby a lot more open. booth seats a little bit different colors to kind of still keep it a little up to date, make it fresh. We wanted to make it cozier, make it a little bit brighter for people to see, to pay homage to where we have been the entire time. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Few spotty showers and thunderstorms at times here this afternoon. A blend of clouds and sunshine develops, high in the mid-90s. Tonight, partly cloudy, low near 75. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS.
Currently, it's 74.
From lift kits to tires, Tire World has the experts and the knowledge to get it done.
This is Gator with Tire World Off-Road. We're your local Rough Country dealer. So when you're ready to add some character to your rig, ask for Gator at Tire World on Memorial Boulevard.
Not only do we sell jewelry, but we also repair it as well as appraise it. Anything purchased from Bell Jewelers, you receive a complimentary appraisal to give to your insurance company. But even if you have a piece of jewelry that didn't necessarily come from us, that's okay. We have 4 GIA certified appraisers on staff. We appraise it on site, so you know exactly what you have. So come see us at Bell Jewelers, 821 Northwest Broad Street, across from Toots.
The Atlanta Braves play here. I'm Ben Ingram, and you're listening to Middle Tennessee's home of the Atlanta Braves. News Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro, Smyrna.
I want to say good morning to Janie Campbell. Janie is the winner of our Slick Pig Banana Pudding today. Happy birthday, Janie Campbell. Also, our good neighbor of the day is Yvette Clark. Yvette is always helping others. Yvette is on the staff at MTSU's, well-connected in all that she does, information and technology. Yvette Clark, she receives flowers from Jenny Harrison and the staff at Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts. Let us know about your good neighbor, somebody who's really special in your area. You never know what it's going to do for them in a positive way. We hear some wonderful stories on that. Our phone number, if you would like to text a question in, 615-893-1450, 615-893-1450. Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, Officer Deputy Chris Beach is with us. We're talking about the peer support group. And here's a question, says, can you tell us a little about some of the 4 most impacting types of issues that psychologically create problems for officers? And I guess you've touched on some of those already.
I can just speak for me personally. The worst stuff for me, that's impacted me the most, has been anything with a child. I've had situations where I've had to do, CPR on babies, and seen, accidents or abuse where children were hurt or worse. Those things are always bad. I don't know about ranking them 1 to 4, but that's definitely on the top of the list. Any kind of, abuse of a child is terrible. Below that is, serious injury or death. And then, when you've got a couple of years ago, we had an officer that, had a crash on his way into work, and it killed him, and that had a big impact on everybody in the department. We had our officers responded to that crash.
Did they know that it was going to be a fellow officer?
I don't believe that they realized that till they got there, and it was,
That made it even worse. I mean, more of a surprise.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that it would matter if they knew or not. I mean, you're going to the scene of a crash where somebody that you're friends with and you work with every day, and you're there for their death, and that's just something that's extremely difficult. And,
oh yeah.
Shortly after that, matter of fact, the weekend that occurred, I was the Monday right after that, I was scheduled to go to Tennessee Public Safety Network's Critical Incident Stress Debrief course. And it's kind of related to peer support, but it's kind of a different thing. But part of that class touched on peer support. And I came back to work the week after that, because that was a week-long class, came back to work and saw, you know, how profoundly affected our agency was by that event. And that's when I decided to try to get the peer support program going. So I started working on that, proposed it, and this was in 2023. Proposed it, took it, you know, to our administration, got everything approved. We spent a lot of time with the company that made the app for us, developing that app. And then finally, in 2025, in April 22nd of 2025 is when we officially launched the app and the peer support program together. And so here we are, you know, 3 months later, and it's, you know, I believe the peer support program is already having a pretty good impact in our agency. There are a lot of things that you see that are terrible, and you know.
And you can't change that.
No, you can't.
That's just part of the job.
It is, and you know, I feel like we refer to filling your cup up. Okay, so you know, you've got your emotional cup, and when it gets full, things start spilling over the top, and that's when bad things happen. Okay, and so you've got a much higher suicide rate in you know, among first responders than you do among the general public. You got a much higher divorce rate among first responders than you do among the general public. You got a much higher alcoholism rate among first responders than you do among the general public. And that's why. It's because their cup fills up and they cope with things in unhealthy ways. And
what can be done? What is there anything that can be done? I mean, instant time off or something of that sort.
Well, in some cases that does happen. It just depends on what it is. But one of the big things that can be done is this program. That's the whole point of it. It's to have people that are trained to recognize, you know, certain things and are trusted by their peers, and because you're alongside them every day, all right? And so you know when something's not right. And, you know, and it may not be that something happened that day. It may be that something happened 2 years ago and this is the anniversary of what happened, right? And so you know when something's not right with the people that you're next to every day. And so these are people that are trained to recognize that and talk to those people, and then, you know, even like refer them to a mental health professional if that's what's needed, which is absolutely fine. There's always been a stigma around that, and there shouldn't be, you know. It's just like if you're sick, go to the doctor, right? It's the same thing. You know, you've got to keep yourself healthy, all right? You got to keep yourself healthy so you can take care of your family, so you can take care of your community, and, you know, be successful in your career. And keep that cup from filling up and overflowing.
It's interesting you mentioned about anniversaries. I can see wedding anniversaries, you need to remember those. But I didn't stop to think people remember anniversaries of a tragic crash that they had to cover as an officer.
Trauma anniversaries.
And are those sticking with you more so than the other anniversaries, the positive anniversaries?
You don't really think of it. I mean, that's just the way to describe it as an anniversary. You're not thinking of it in the same
light. You hit it right. Trauma anniversary.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. I wouldn't compare the two. I mean, one's you know, a happy thing, and the other one isn't. And a lot of times, people may not even realize the actual dates of things. But your body remembers. And you may not realize, oh, well, hey, this month, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I worked a murder-suicide that really affected me. And every time that month rolls around, you're grumpy and you are depressed and you feel terrible. And you don't even really, until you look into it and you talk to somebody and you figure, you know, you connect the dots, you don't even realize why it is that you feel that way. But there's things that, you know, it may be you spring and, you know, you roll down a certain street or whatever, and it triggers that event in your mind. And like I said, you got a cup, and whether you realize it or not, your body realizes it and your mind realizes it, and that cup can get full. And when it does, those kinds of things happen.
Thank goodness we have fellow officers who care and who notice and can alert the peer support group that, hey, so-and-so may need some help. Is this sort of like we hear so much these days about the military veterans suffering from PTSD? Is this a form of PTSD?
Absolutely. So your military guys, they deploy to a war zone, and they're there for an extended period of time, and they come home. And I've not been in the military, but I have, you know, obviously work around a lot of guys that have been, and they come home, and you know, that the trauma that they that occurred there, and yes, a lot of times they have a very hard time dealing with what they saw and what happened and all that, and their friends dying, and that's absolutely terrible. It's different for us because it's ongoing for as long as you're in the career.
And then you still, even if you get out of the career, it's still there.
Right. But if you stay in law enforcement or any first responder, really, you're not deploying to somewhere and then coming home. You're leaving your driveway and you're there every day that you work. So it's, I'm not trying to compare the two because they're both absolute, they're both rough. There's just a difference. And so,
but yes. Yours has volumes that will continue for life. I mean, it,
right.
In a 1 month period of time, does every officer pretty much see at least one thing that is what the average citizen would say? That's, I don't see how you even go through that one.
You know, some guys might get lucky and go a while without having something, you know, really bad.
You don't see a tragic wreck, a shooting,
right?
Or something like that.
And you know, but others may have, you know, they may have three in a month or whatever. It just, you know, it's kind of like rolling dice. You never know what's going to happen. I've, you know, it just depends on how you know what happens in the community. I mean, I'll tell you, we frequently have, you know, death calls. Not all of them are traumatic. Some of them are, you know, natural deaths where, you know, age or heart attack or
pretty
whatever.
Pretty rough, and, too, I imagine.
Yeah, well, it can be. But
I mean, it depends on if their children, say, come along and,
right,
and very
right
involved. It's a very, especially if you're the one who has to tell them.
Right. Yeah.
That would be horrible. I mean, that would be really rough.
Yeah. And you know, with the fentanyl epidemic, we you know, have multiple overdoses all the time. And, you know, those can be rough, too, depending on circumstances. And I mean, it's something all the time.
People seem to create new things that are dangerous. Road rage. I mean, I don't remember road rage. You go back enough years, I don't remember that many cases of road rage, but it's pretty common these days. Why do we see such an increase?
I mean, I've got opinions on all that.
Your opinions are based more on fact than anybody else's.
Well, people are, they live in a virtual world. And they don't realize that real life isn't that. They don't cultivate personal relationships. They all their friends are online in a game or whatever. And parents have quit parenting. And you're not taught values, and you don't have a positive role model in your life, and all of those things, it translates into your adulthood. And, a lot of times that ends up expressing itself in criminal behavior, and somebody ends up being a victim of that. And, you know, that's not road, just specifically road rage. That's all of it, you know? And, you know, I think it all, the root of a lot of the problems that we have starts at home and in childhood and in the way that kids are raised. And that's dramatically changed over the decades.
Parents not saying no enough. They're wanting
parents
to be.
Parents aren't saying anything enough. Parents want to go be kids themselves instead of parents. They want to act like children themselves. They're not parenting. I mean, they're producing kids, but they're not parenting.
They want to be their best friend. Their child's best friend. Not the parent.
Yeah, in some cases they're not even present.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
the kids are raising themselves, and.
And is that, do you run into that regularly here?
Sure, yeah.
I guess.
You should interview somebody from DCS and see what they've got to say about it.
Boy, when you say they're not parenting, they're not even around. They just leave the kids at home,
or they're, and you know, in some cases they're there, but they're not. You know, the same thing applies to them. Their whole world's in a phone. They're not paying attention to what their kids are doing, and they don't care. You know, I've seen kids living in the absolute worst conditions that you could ever think of, and the parents are just like meh. They just don't care.
And we'll never go back to the time prior to these portable phones, because it's too much money.
No, but. What we can do is instill some parenting skills in children, in young adults, and try to get back to families being families and parents parenting and values being instilled in children at a young age and up through adulthood, so that, you know, when they do become an adult, they become, you know, a productive valued citizen instead of, you know, a criminal. That we can do that. It's a big hill to climb, but, you know, little steps can make it happen.
Oh, very definitely. Some really valuable information this morning, and I want to remind everybody, we do have this program. It will be in podcast format, which basically means you can listen to it again whenever you wish, at a time that you can really focus in on some of these thoughts that Deputy Chris Beach is sharing with us this morning. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
The GNS in our call stands for Good Neighbor Station. That's been our objective since 1947. WTNS, AM, FM, and online.
Alan Butcher.
Well, the thing I like about Adams Place is that when you come here, you're coming to a complete healthcare system. You start off in independent living, and then if you need additional care, you go to assisted living. And we also have a memory unit and a rehab unit.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
Hi, this is Jenny at Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts.
For decades, Ryan's Flowers has been the good neighbor flower shop.
Came across a lady like that, and it was on a chilly night. She almost didn't answer the door, and at the last minute she did. She was so happy. The look on her face is just overwhelming.
Every order from Ryan's is for a good neighbor.
Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts, 117 South Academy, just a couple blocks off the square.
Few spotty showers and thunderstorms at times here this afternoon. A blend of clouds and sunshine develops, high in the mid-90s. Tonight, partly cloudy, low near 75. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Vujicic, ski on News Radio WGNS.
Currently, it's 74.
FM 1019, FM 100.5, WGNSradio.com. The Good Neighbor Network.
Welcome back. We're in the final segment of our broadcast this morning. Rutherford County Sheriff's Office Deputy Chris Beach is with us. We're focusing on their peer support group, One other area of that particular program, the critical incident stress debrief class, I believe you attended that, didn't you?
Yes, sir. It's a residential class put on by the Tennessee Public Safety Network. It's 4 days. It's a lot of great information. So when our officers go through a critical incident that's likely to have a post-traumatic effect on them, we have what's called a critical incident stress debrief. And essentially what that is we have trained debriefers, which I'm one of, but we have trained debriefers come from other agencies, generally outside of our county, and they come, and a mental health professional comes, and them and all of the people involved in that critical incident sit down and they hash out the entire incident in a confidential setting. And so they hash out everything that happened. All the people involved get, you know, the pieces and parts of the incident that they're missing in their minds get filled in. They hash it all out. They talk about, you know, how they felt about it and the different, you know, literally everything about the incident. And it's shown that having that debrief after a critical incident that's likely to cause trauma or post-traumatic stress response down the road drastically reduces the chances of that incident causing that post-traumatic stress response. And so the Tennessee Public Safety Network, they've been teaching this and facilitating these debriefs since the 90s, I believe. And they're a nonprofit organization that they relied heavily on some federal grants and stuff like that have kind of dried up in recent years, and they save the lives of first responders. I'm not exaggerating when I say that, and I'd like to plug them real quick. Their website is www.tnpsn.org. That's Tennessee Public Safety Network, TNPSN.org. There is a place there that people can donate to them and help them out so that they can help us out. Great organization, absolutely worth anything that you can help them with. And like I said, they save the lives of first responders.
And this is a debriefing of an officer who has gone through a traumatic incident.
Yes. All of the people involved in the incident. So let's say you have for lack of a better example, an officer involved shooting or something like that. Everybody gets together that was involved in the incident, and with trained debriefers from outside of your agency that are not connected, and a mental health professional, and you all sit down in a room together, generally in a circle. Everybody goes through their experience with the incident. Everybody goes, it resolves the incident in people's minds and drastically reduces the chances of a post-traumatic stress response down the road.
Now, for that to be the most effective, is that based on time? And is it more effective if the closer you get it to when the incident occurred?
Generally, it happens within, you know, a week or 10 days of the incident, sometimes sooner than that, depending on what can be arranged. However, when I went to critical incident stress debrief school, I went through a debrief there of an incident that occurred with me years ago. And it's hard to describe the difference from before and after, but you can go through a debrief on an the amount of time is relevant, but not super relevant. Like, it'll still be beneficial for you to go through a debrief on an incident that may have occurred a long time ago.
While you think back to your debriefings, was it hard to think of an incident that sort of needed to be debriefed?
No.
Or did you keep it hidden down deep and you had a hard time finding it?
No, it was very easy for me to figure out an incident that I needed to debrief on.
Okay. I tell you, let's, we don't usually, I was going to grab this phone call, but I think we just missed it. We don't usually take calls, but on subjects like this, sometimes there are some comments that we get from the other side. But so you try to do it within a week or 10 days, some type of debriefing. And it's, for example, the people last week, the officers who were working the multi-vehicle accident on the interstate in Laverne, and a person was shot in the car. That had to be traumatic for whoever came on that.
So I checked in with some of the people that were involved in that, and initially there were multiple agencies involved in it. Our guys got there, you know, pretty, you know, well after the fact, kinda. So we didn't have anybody that had a rough time with that specific incident, just because of their level of involvement in it. But something like that, you know, if you're the you know, the first person there or the second person there, and you're, you know, trying to render aid and do those things, I was off work that day. I don't know which agency got there first. I know it was right there near Laverne, so I'm assuming probably Laverne got there first, but I don't know that for sure. But if you know, you're the one that's trying to render aid and you know, save a life, and you know, you ultimately don't succeed at that, you know, absolutely, that type of situation could affect you, especially depending on, you know, your time in the job and your level of experience and all of those things.
We want to say a special thank you today to Rutherford County Sheriff's Officers Deputy Chris Beach for sharing with us about this peer support group. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.